You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Hour two, Anita Marks with you this morning. It is Sunday Fun Day. Always great to have Moak Hamilton join us on the show whenever we're talking NBA, especially the Knicks. Moak, how you doing? Good morning.
Happy Sunday to you and all your listeners, Anita. Hope all is well.
Oh, happy Sunday Fun Day to you as well, my friend, and happy St. Patrick's Day. Are you wearing green? Are you wearing green today?
Not at the moment, but I think I have a pair of socks around here, that I'll be able to use and get my credit for. I just got to find them somewhere, but they're around here somewhere.
So I'm going to wear green today. I'm just trying to I don't own a lot of stuff that's green, mm-hmm. So I have stuff that's mint. But
does that count?
But not green. I don't think mint's going to pass. So I'm stressing out a little bit. But nonetheless, happy St. Patrick's Day to you and yours, and of course, all our listeners out there, and happy Sunday Fun Day. All right, let's dive into it, and let's start with last night. This Knicks team, they hold the Kings. I don't know what was more impressive, the fact that Brunson put up another 40-plus points or the Knicks holding the Kings to under 100 points. What's more impressive to you?
I think I'd probably go with the latter. The Kings are definitely a potent offense and definitely a very gifted and talented bunch. And, you know, if you just kind of peruse the box score from last night, you know, you see Keegan Murray 3-for-12, you know, De'Aaron Fox 5-for-19, Malik Monk 6-for-14. That I find to be quite impressive. Now, Brunson dropping 40, obviously that's a big deal too, but I think that it's more something that we would expect to see than to see, you know, a talented team like Sacramento go an entire game shooting 35% from the field. So it just goes to show you the gears that this team has, and also kind of reiterates the point that in this league, in the NBA, if you play tough defense and if you compete on that end of the floor, you can probably beat anybody on any given night. So if you're Tom Thibodeau, if you're a fan of the Knicks, you know, you got to come away from Saturday night's victory feeling pretty good about the team. I think that's definitely fair to say.
Yeah, so now that OG is back, played 33 minutes yesterday, and there was some talk and speculation that he wasn't going to play at all because we saw him kind of retweak that shoulder issue against Portland. Had 6 rebounds, 3 blocks, only 2 points, but Hartenstein with 14 rebounds, Josh Hart with 13 rebounds. You know, I was just talking about, you know, the role playing here. And let's give credit where credit's due as well. And let's give credit to Tibbs in regard to, you know, deciding who's on the court when, who's getting what minutes and how this mm-hmm. all plays out. And also coaching the team that, you know, this is like a blue collar Knicks team, right? Like they're, you know, the under hits in the majority of their games, but they're still exciting and fun to watch. So your thoughts on the role playing that's taking place here, that's helping this Knicks team win ball games.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely said it. I mean, I think the best thing about it, from Tom Thibodeau's standpoint, is that, you know, you look all of a sudden and you see that these guys have won 3 games in a row. They've won 4 out of their last 5, and the thing about it that makes you feel good is that you get different contributions from different guys at different times. And it certainly kind of illustrates the fact that this team has some impressive depth. And that depth is really what has enabled them to sort of, tide the storm in a way without Julius Randle, you know? He's been missing for so long. And this team has certainly gone through some stretches where, I mean, yeah, you know, they've certainly had some tribulations and they've had their share of losses, but they have done much more than merely tread water in the absence of Randle. And it's because of the depth, and it's because of the contributions that Tom Thibodeau's been able to get from guys like Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, now that he's back in the lineup. For a time, Precious Achiuwa was the one who was giving you some standout performances. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to the coach. He's had these guys ready to play. And now the Knicks wake up today on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, and they find themselves in the fourth seed in the conference. And that, I think, is a pretty favorable position for them. That would give them, obviously, they'd be avoiding the play-in if the postseason began today. But more importantly, they'd be in the fourth seed. They'd find themselves cross-matched against the Orlando Magic again if it all started today. And most importantly, obviously, they'd have home court advantage in the first round of the postseason. So, again, all things considered, you gotta like where you are if you're Tom Thibodeau. I think he's done a pretty good job, all things considered.
Again, Mo Hamilton joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. With that being said, what are you hearing? What is the latest? When do you think Julius Randle will be able to join the team? And also hearing anything on Mitch Robinson, Moke?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta give the organization credit. They have been fairly tight-lipped about both guys. Me personally, I am not really that optimistic about Julius Randle and about his return. I mean, I guess there's two different things, right? Number one, there's being able to return to game action, and then it's a different thing to be able to return to game action and be effective and to be able to play your game. And I think that's sort of what the tricky thing with Randle has been the entire time is, yes, you know, he might be able to get to a point where he's able to play, but he's taking controlled contact in practice, as far as I know. And the thing about the controlled contact is it's not the same as what you experience during games and during live action. And for someone whose game is really sort of predicated on being able to use that shoulder and drive it into defenders and just playing a really physical brand of basketball, certainly in the paint, it does give you cause for concern. So I think that the Knicks have been extremely cautious with Randle. I think that the hope from the beginning was to avoid surgery and to avoid having him miss an extended period of time. And they're still sticking with that plan. Do I think that he'll be back at 100% or at 100% effectiveness? Maybe he'll be back, but the 100% part, I'm not necessarily sure about. So a little pessimistic about that personally. As far as Mitchell Robinson is concerned, there's really not been much new information about Robinson's injury, but there are a majority of people out there that do think that he will be able to make a return at some point and add to the impressive front court depth that we were talking to a little earlier. So, you know, if Randle's able to get back on the floor, even if he's not 100%, you can even say the same for Mitchell Robinson, it'll make these guys more formidable. And without question, if they continue to play that they've been playing, they will have a chance to win at least the first round series and advance into the second round, where if the chalk holds, they'd have a date with Jason Tatum and Kristaps Porzingis and the Boston Celtics. So exciting times in New York, and we're approaching the postseason, and most people around the NBA can't wait to see what these Knicks are able to do.
We've got the next game up for the Knicks is at the Golden State Warriors, who, by the way, did you watch the end of that Golden State Warrior-Lakers game last night? I know it was late.
I actually did not see it. I did not see the end of the game. I know that, you know, the Lakers have some issues with Anthony Davis now. That is obviously something that's going to have to be monitored as they continue to fight for their postseason lives as well. So a lot still to be determined, but I take it you did see it and you were kind of excited by what you saw.
Well, I mean, it was a debacle, really. So it was interesting. So there was a call, a play, a call that was challenged, and they went back to look on the film, and they took away a basket from LeBron James from a previous play that they just happened to see, which was kind of weird. His foot was out of bounds when he hit a three, so they removed those 3 points from the scoreboard. And then the last, like, 2 minutes of the game, the clock at the Crypto Arena wasn't working. So they tried to start the game, and then it didn't happen. They started try to start the game again, didn't, like at least 4 or 5 times. They were thinking about having, you know, the in-house commentator count down out loud, because they were sitting there and it wasn't looking like they were going to be able to end the game because the clock wasn't working properly. It was a debacle. But nonetheless, the Golden State Warriors beat the Lakers. And of course, this is next up. How do you feel that I didn't think that the Knicks would beat the Kings, full transparency. They go from Golden State and then they go to Denver. Your thoughts on the next two matchups and how you feel that this Knicks team can match up. You know, the one thing I do see them having an advantage of is, you know, the Golden State Warriors really don't have a lot of answers to teams that are strong in the paint. And with OG back and Hartenstein and how Josh Hart is playing so well, I think the Knicks match up really well against Golden State. And I think also their perimeter defense, they can limit Steph Curry.
Yeah, I certainly think that's fair. I mean, the Warriors, you know, their Achilles heel has always been their lack of size. Last postseason, it's something that, last offseason, I should say, it's something that a lot of people thought that they would take some care to address. They really haven't been able to do that effectively. They have gotten some good minutes from some of their young guys. Jonathan Kuminga certainly has seemed to have taken a step forward. As far as the Knicks' prospects of going to San Francisco and getting a W on Monday, I mean, I think these guys have shown you that they can compete with anybody. And if they are able to play defense the way that they did against the Kings, and if they're able to hold Steph Curry, who's just returning to the lineup himself, if they're able to hold him to a reasonable shooting night, then they're going to have a chance to win. I think for them, similar to the recipe, well, I shouldn't say similar, it's obvious that the Lakers struggled to slow Klay Thompson, right? And at this point with the Warriors, I kind of want to say that he is the difference between them just being an okay team and them being able to lose to a team on paper that you might not expect versus them being a juggernaut or them being a team that's going to compete for the conference, right? So against the Lakers, you know, 9 of 15 off the bench, 5 of 10 from 3, and he gave him 26 points. That type of effort, if the Warriors get it from Klay against any team, including the Knicks, odds are they're going to win that contest. So I think the challenge for Thibodeau's team is pretty much going to be what it was against Sacramento. You know, they're going to have to defend these guys. They're going to have to try to control them from the three-point line. And on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to have to try to take advantage of their ability, you know, their proficiency on the glass. You know, the Knicks have some plus rebounders at a bunch of positions on the floor. And if they're able to win the battle on the glass, hold the Warriors from the three-point line, and get a good effort from Jalen Brunson, at least one more of his teammates, whether it be Josh Hart or OG Anunoby, then they're going to have a chance to compete, and they're going to have a chance to win that game. So they're 2-0 on what was deemed to be a really, really tough four-game trip. And if they're able to get one of the next two and go, I mean, even at 2-2, it's, you know, there are worse things. But you win the first two, you got to get greedy and start thinking that you can win one of these last two, at least one of these last two, and go back to New York with a 3-1 trip. That would make the Knicks feel really good as they prepare to host the Brooklyn Nets next Saturday once they return to the comfy confines of MSG.
Again, Moak Hamilton joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Moak, let's look big picture before we let you go and off to your St. Patrick's Day Sunday fun day. In the East, the Boston Celtics, let's be honest, nobody's going to catch up to them. They're sitting at 52-14, a 9.5-game lead over the Milwaukee Bucks. And oh, by the way, have the easiest strength of schedule remaining in the NBA for the remainder of the regular season. The Bucks at 2, the Cavs at 3, the Knicks at 4, the Knicks 2 games behind Cleveland, 3 games behind the Bucks. By the way, Cleveland lost to Houston yesterday. If you're saying there's a chance, I'm saying that there's a chance that this Knicks team can get up to the 2 seed, and obviously really motivated to do so. That way they wouldn't have to face the Boston Celtics until the Eastern Conference Championship, of course, if they can last that long. You've got the four play-in, the 76ers, the Miami Heat, the Bulls, and the Hawks on the outside looking in to the top six. Your thoughts and what you think the probability is for this Knicks team, whose, by the way, strength of schedule is somewhere middle of the pack, around 16. The Bucks have the fourth most difficult strength of schedule still remaining. The Cleveland Cavs have the 19th easiest strength of schedule remaining. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Anita, the Bucks, the Cavs, and the Knicks, I think it's fair to say that they've been in a long fight for that number two seed, back and forth, a three-way fight, you know? And the team that walks away with it, in all likelihood, is just going to be the team who's the healthiest. You know, they've all had injuries at different times. You know, obviously we talked a bit about Julius Randle. The Cavaliers, you know, they've had their struggles with their health as well. Donovan Mitchell, without him being in the lineup at 100%, without him being in the lineup at all, they're not a team that really strikes fear in your heart as the third seed or even the second seed in the conference. Milwaukee, you can say the same thing. You know, Damian Lillard, they obviously have been playing better lately, but I think it's still fair to say that Damian Lillard and Giannis, they're still trying to figure some things out. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people kind of expected, I mean, just to put it bluntly, I think people expected more from Lillard this season. I think after being in Portland for so long, the expectation was having the opportunity to compete for a championship in Milwaukee would have certainly served as a motivational factor, and that, you know, he would have resembled the all-NBA performer he's been for the majority of his career. That really hasn't been the case. So as we wake up today on St. Paddy's Day, you know, it's, Knicks are 3 behind in the loss column to the Bucks, and it's a three-way fight for that second seed in the conference. Right, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up the way that it is right now, with Milwaukee at 2, Cleveland at 3, the Knicks at 4. I think that that is the most natural order, but at the same time, I wasn't really putting the Knicks in as the fourth seed, definitely not pre-OG Anunoby, and even after. You know, I think the way this team looked at the pinnacle of their playing this season, you know, I think that they certainly did look like a number two seed for a time. So I think for them, I would be bullish on the Knicks capturing that number two seed if they were fully healthy, if Randall and Robinson were back in the lineup. Without either one of them, I do think that they end up sticking at number four, and I do think that that kind of cross-matches them with the Celtics in a matchup in round two if the chalk were to hold. And honestly, I think that would be a very, very competitive series. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this thing plays out. And if I'm a fan of the Knicks, I'm hoping that Randall's able to get back on the court sooner rather than later. Because like you said, moving up to number three or even number two, it would have some positive benefits for the team.
Last but not least, let's take a look at what's going on in the West. OKC, Denver, Minnesota, they're trying to battle it out for one. I personally believe that Denver ends up with the one myself. The Clippers, the Pelicans, the Suns, and then, of course, you've got the Kings, Dallas, Golden State, and the Lakers all sitting in that play-in position. And because the Lakers lost to Golden State, they would have to, if the season was to end today, they would have to go to Golden State and play Golden State for that play-in. No bueno. I'm not feeling this Lakers team right now, especially again, let's rewind. AD got poked in the eye. He only played 12 minutes last night. He was a real big key and factor, I think, for the Lakers beating the Golden State Warriors because he dominates in the paint. But nonetheless, how do you see the West playing out? Are you with me? You think Denver ends up with the one seed?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would give the Nuggets the respect of putting them in there at number one. I think it's important to note that at least as of right now, the Thunder do have the tiebreaker over them. So that, I guess, is just something that we'd have to sort of keep an eye on. But Denver, I think what's scary about them is when they're at the peak of their powers, they are just unstoppable. And they have, and I mean, they're the defending champs for a reason, right? Like, they share the ball, they can defend when they need to. Jokic is unstoppable. And Jamal Murray, of all players in the league, he kind of has this ability, I guess kind of like Paul Pierce in a way, where he has this ability to kind of just kind of float through certain points of the game. You know, he'll have a 6-minute stretch or an 8-minute stretch where he's kind of just like going through the motions, and he's, you know, setting screens, and he's delivering the ball where it needs to go, and he's kind of chilling a little bit. And then when you look up, you know, when he decides to turn on the Jets, over a 6 to 8 minute span, like, he can bury you. You know, this is a guy who's capable of scoring 25 plus points in a quarter. And when he gets it going with all the other weapons that Denver has, they're just unstoppable. So I do like them to end up with that number one seed. I think they're motivated to show that last season's championship was no fluke. They know that home court advantage is on the line when you're talking about that battle for the number one versus number two seed when you get away to the conference finals. I think that'll be a motivational factor for them. The play-in out west is just going to be a dogfight. I mean, that, you talk, what's the thing that you like to talk about? Appointment TV? Is that like one of your terms, Anita, if I remember correctly? That's going to be
appointment television, TV. Baby. Appointment television.
Appointment television. Yeah. Seeing the Kings and the Mavs and the Warriors and the Lakers go at it to see two teams move on to the postseason. Like that's going to be amazing. And yeah, certainly the Lakers didn't do themselves any favors by dropping the contest to the Warriors last night. So really exciting finish ahead for us in the Western Conference.
Great stuff as always, Moak. Always good having you on, my friend. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
You got it. Moak Hamilton joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Make sure you follow him on all things social media, covering the NBA and, of course, the Knicks here in our own backyard. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. You want to jump on board. Now's the time to do so. Coming your way in the next few minutes, we're going to have Jordan Renan join us. We're going to switch gears here and talk some NFL. 98.7 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, let's get you up to speed tonight. Not only is today St. Patrick's Day, but tonight is Selection Sunday. So time now for your tournament update driven by Nissan. Again, this is Bubble Watch. So right now, this is what we're quote-unquote anticipating. The ones to be Purdue, UConn, UNC in Houston. Interesting to see if UNC still remains a one, even though they lost to NC State yesterday. The twos, Marquette, Iowa State. I don't know, does Iowa State become a one? Possibly Arizona lost to Oregon and in Tennessee. So the twos, Arizona, Tennessee, Iowa State, and Marquette. Now, teams that are on the bubble right now, right? Last four, potentially that could get in: St. John's, Northwestern, Texas A&M, and then, of course, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh could get in, obviously, with what we saw happen yesterday. Virginia, Seton Hall, Ohio State, and Indiana State as well. So those eight teams definitely will be tuned in to their TV sets later on tonight as who's been invited to the big dance will be revealed. Tournament update driven by Nissan, coming to you with all the excitement of a Hollywood blockbuster at the Nissan Thrill of the Drive Sales event. Shop impressive savings at nissanusa.com today. Quick break. We come back. We will be joined by Jordan Renan. Let's switch some gears. We're going to talk We're going to talk Giants first. The moves, Burns coming on. Of course, Drew Lock as the backup quarterback to Daniel Jones. We'll talk all of that with Jordan Renan. Also, what he expects this Giants team to do as we get closer to the NFL draft. And of course, following him, coming your way around 11 o'clock, we're going to hear from Rich Cimini and do the same with the Jets. We'll have our phone lines open as well right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you on this Sunday morning. Working on getting Jordan Renan to join us on the program. So hopefully he will momentarily. 800-919-3776, the phone number you want to chime in. Talking all things Giants as making money moves, that's for sure, this free agency. Signing Brian Burns to a five-year, $150 million deal, and now joining Tibbs as well as Dexter Lawrence in that front seven. I think one could argue one of the best pass rush teams in the NFC East. I think you could make an argument, as always, because it's typically what the Eagles do. But the Eagles taking a step back, I think, you know, Fletcher Cox retiring. And one thing the Eagles have done, and you know, it's an interesting, what's the word I'm looking for? Experiment. And that is, they have really targeted University of Georgia players, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But they really haven't panned out as of yet. So I think this very well could become the best front seven in regard to pressure rate in the NFC East. I like the signing. Now, is it maybe too much money? 5 years, $150 million. Listen, as we know, the salary cap went up. So teams had anticipated it to go up some. I think teams were anticipating it to go somewhere in the $20 million range, not the $30 million range. But, you know, teams have to be really, really happy that happened. And we saw, again, what an insane free agent market that it was. Here's the thing with Brian Burns. He has a pass rush win rate of 21%, which is very high, top three in the NFL in regard to pass rushers, okay? But only 8 sacks to show for it last year. So again, 5 years, $150 million. He gets after the quarterback, but doesn't close all the time. Again, 8 sacks. Now, if we're talking about, you know, 10 and a half, 11 sacks. Okay. Is it because he's getting double teamed? Will he have more opportunity here with the Giants because now teams have to really focus on Tibbs and Dexter Lawrence and of course some others on this defensive line possibly. How would the Giants utilize him on defense? So But obviously, Brian Burns, the biggest signing in free agency for this Giants team. And looking at the salary cap situation and where everything stands right now, heading into free agency, there were, I want to say, like 10 to 12 teams that were over the cap. Right now, only one sits over the cap, and that's the Atlanta Falcons. And they're about $2.4 million over the cap. So they're going to have to do some adjusting. Also, keep in mind, teams have to make sure that they have enough cap space in order to sign the players that they're going to be drafting, right? Coming up in April. So you've got to do that as well. There's still money here to be spent for, and just looking at where everybody stands right now in regard to cap space, the Commanders still have a little over $52 million in cap space to spend. The Patriots, 48. The Titans, 48. The Bears sitting with 41, along with the two top 10 draft picks, which is really, really unbelievable. The Eagles sitting at 35, which is really impressive because they were not in that situation to start free agency. They were pretty much towards down bottom of the pack, nearly over the cap. So the Eagles and Howie Roseman always just working magic, I tell you that. Then you've got the Cardinals, the Lions. So where do the Giants and the Jets stand right now? So the Jets have about $16.4 million in cap space. The Giants have 4.3. So that's where they stand. Again, hoping we could get Jordan Renan on. Because curious, I want to talk to him about the salary cap situation and also what he thinks this Giants team is going to do as we get closer to the NFL draft. Because with all expectation, Daniel Jones being the starting quarterback, I know we heard from Rich Eisen last week saying that the front office is done with Daniel Jones. Again, it's from Rich Eisen, and he's pretty well connected, obviously. You know, being the face of the NFL Network for as long as he has. The Giants go out and they sign Drew Lock to come in and be second to Daniel Jones. And then, of course, they still have DeVito. So if the Giants were to go out and draft a quarterback, obviously that would be a very crowded, that's the word I was looking for, a very crowded quarterback room. So with what the Giants did in free agency, you know, riding on the, there's still a lot of mock drafts who have the Giants drafting a quarterback at six, and a lot of them have them drafting JJ McCarthy. So I know I've said this time and time again, I sound like a broken record, sorry, not sorry, but I would love to see this Giants team trade up if Drake May is still available at three. And of course, we know the Patriots are looking for a quarterback. I just want to call up what the draft mock drafts are looking like. So first and foremost, okay, so the Bears looking at Caleb Williams, right? Again, I'm not a huge Caleb Williams fan. I don't believe he's the best quarterback in this draft. But again, everybody and their grandmother has Caleb Williams going to the Bears. As we talked about Justin Fields not too long ago when we started the show, because news broke last night that Justin Fields was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a sixth round pick. If Justin Fields plays more than 51% of the snaps, that sixth round pick then jumps up to a fourth round for the Bears. So if I'm the Bears, I'd rather, for me, number one, I would draft Drake May. Number two, I would have kept Justin Fields and traded down. But of course, they just traded Justin Fields and everybody's expecting them to take Caleb Williams, which I think will be the wrong choice. Then Jaden Daniels going to Washington at two. Many have Jaden Daniels going to Washington more so than Drake May. And then Drake May sitting there still at three, the Patriots needing a quarterback, but a number of other teams in the market for a quarterback as well. I think the Patriots' phone is going to be ringing off the hook. So A, do they take a quarterback at three? B, do they trade down and see what team would that be. Would it be Minnesota? Would it be the Giants? I would love for it to be the Giants. But again, a number of teams looking to trade up and try to get that pick. And it seems like the Patriots, out of all three teams, the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots being the most open to listen to listening to trade offers to move up. Then Marvin Harrison at four, wide receiver, really dropping right in the lap of the Cardinals. Many people feel that Harrison is the best player in this draft. And then, of course, other wide receivers to go. And a number of mock drafts have the Giants picking J.J. McCarthy, quarterback from Michigan, at six, which I think that's way too high. Will McCarthy go in the first round based on everything that we're hearing post the combine? I believe that he will. I heard that he was a really great interview, had unbelievable football IQ, and really impressed the socks off of a number of general managers and scouts and coaches. For me, I think a first round is a lot for J.J. McCarthy. I could see him going somewhere in the second or third round, but many mock drafts have him going the first round after a real good showing at the combine. So there's that. In regard to the Jets, sitting there at 10, a number of mock drafts have them taking Talese Fuaga, offensive tackle from Oregon State. Do they go with an offensive lineman? All the moves that they made in free agency. Again, we're going to have Rich Cimini, who's going to be joining us in about 15 minutes. So excited to get him on to talk about that and what he thinks the Jets are going to do now that they've pretty much taken care of a number of their needs. Do they go with an offensive lineman at 10? Do they go with a wide receiver? So, I'm sorry, what did you say? We do? Okay, well, let's do this because we're already at 10:43. We'll take a quick break. We come back. Jordan Renan will join us next right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, we finally got the man, the myth, the legend. That is Jordan Renan, who covers the Giants for ESPN. Jordan, good morning.
Good morning, Nita. I apologize. I will take this one and take full blame. My phone was on silent, and I did not. And I was charging it. I did not hear it.
That's okay. Hey, so, listen, stuff happens. I'd use a different word, but it's a family show.
all right, let's start. I'm just saying, you gave us the warning. You gave us the reminder. You were on top of it this time. This one, my bad.
It's all good. It's all good. All right, let's dive into it. Brian Burns, obviously the biggest signing, 5 years, $150 million. I think that's a lot for a guy who only had 8 sacks. But you put him on this defensive line. One could argue maybe the best front seven in the NFC East, even better than the Eagles this coming season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think real quick. The Eagles front seven is no longer the strength, right? Mm-hmm. It's not quite as strong mm-hmm. as it was in the past. The Cowboys, they're not great on the interior, right? On the front, they do have that pass rush, but against the run, yeah, not very good. So I think it's definitely, and obviously the Commanders, that used to be the strength of the team, that front four, and they kind of got rid of some of those guys. So yeah, I think that's a fair comment. It's now the strength of the team, and the team is building around what they're hoping is a strong defensive front, but it's still important, I think, to fill out that front for the New York Giants. Because you can't just rely on three guys having play all the time. Like, that's not how it works in the NFL. You need a lot of guys. You need to rotate them. And remember, even the Giants in their heyday, like, they had OC, they had Puck, they had Kiwanuka, Strahan, JPP. Like, you still need to be able to roll guys in. So depth is still important there, and it's just one of their many holes that they still have left.
Let's just stay on the defensive side of the ball. Any other defensive signings that took place that you like or you feel will be addressed in the draft, Jordan?
They're going to need to add a cornerback here in free agency. I'd expect them to add a corner at some point. Think in the realm of, remember Fabian Moreau 2 years ago? A veteran kind of guy who could come in and start. He did not, I don't think it's going to be Fabian Moreau, but someone in that shape or form, right? Because what do the Giants have a cornerback right now? They have Deontay Banks and then Nick McLeod, who I think has been pretty good for them, but Nick McLeod's a restricted free agent young guy, and Trey Hawkins. So adding a veteran to that defensive backfield and at the cornerback position, I believe is going to be something that the Giants do up in here. But overall, like, I don't expect many more big moves for that defense. That defense is going to be contingent on Brian Burns and how good he can be, right? The Giants made a bet on Brian Burns. You said that's a lot of money, right? And I talked to someone in the league, and what they said, I said, what do you think of the move? They said they got good value on the trade. They didn't get good value on the contract.
Right.
So kind of agreeing with you that that's a lot of money. But the Giants are making a bet. They're making a wager here, right, that Brian Burns can take his game to that next level. So I think that this team and their success moving forward, not only is he's essentially, they need him to be one of the faces of the franchise. They need him to be maybe not Michael Strahan level, but they need him to be, you know, that JPP level when he first came into the league the first few years. Like, that's what they're gambling on, and that's what Joe Shane essentially partially put his future on, that's going to happen. And I do think this, moving Kayvon Thibodeau into that secondary role where the attention isn't going to be on him, I think that's actually big for him. I think that's ideal for him, because I look at him, and I've been saying this for a couple of years now. You see a good player, you don't see a great player. But this will allow him to be in a perfect role, and I think that should be able to complement each other well.
Again, Jordan Renaud joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Let's turn our attention to what's going on the offense. And Drew Lock coming in to not compete with Daniel Jones, right? But to be the backup to Daniel Jones. That's what the expectation is. DeVito's in that quarterback room as well. Your thoughts on you know, how this quarterback situation is going to play out? I know you've been very optimistic about Daniel Jones being ready to start the season because of everything that you're hearing. Yeah. Also, curious to get your thoughts on, do you think the Giants still draft a quarterback now that they brought in Drew Lock?
I don't think Drew Lock changes much for them. He's 1 year, $5 million. I mean, that's less than they invested in Tyrod Taylor a couple of years ago. So I don't think Drew Lock changes the equation at all. What I do think Brian Burns changes, right, the Giants have 6 picks right now. That's among the fewest in the NFL. The likelihood is, and unless that number 3 spot is available, and at least for right now, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. You know, the move for the Giants may actually now be moving down, right? Okay, get that second, maybe if they like the Bo Nix or Michael Penix kind of guy. All right, maneuvering draft picks. Remember, Joe Shane has been very aggressive in the draft, whether it's moving up, moving down, collecting more picks, moving back and forth. Remember, he moved one spot up last year. He moved back in the second round, a couple spots, so I kind of expect them to maybe, in some way, shape, or form, try and collect more picks. So if anything, I think free agency, and it's more, not really Drew Lock, it's more Brian Burns, right, because that exhausted one of their second-round picks. Instead of moving up, I think it's almost more likely maybe the Giants move down, collect more picks, and still grab a quarterback at some point.
So you don't think the Patriots are going to shop that number 3 pick? I believe they are. You don't believe they are. Why? Because they got rid of Mac Jones? You don't think they're going to be shopping that number 3 pick?
Well, what does getting rid of Mac Jones mean to that? I mean, that actually means more likely to keep the pick, aren't they?
I would imagine, but I think they knew. I think here's the thing. I think they knew they were going to get rid of Mac Jones. Even when reports out there the last month was that, you know, they're trying to shop the pick and they're utilizing the Giants to do so because they're telling other teams that the Giants are going to want to move up and draft JJ McCarthy at six. So, you know, if you want one of the top four quarterbacks,
what do the Giants have to give him? How about that right now? This is what
would the Giants have to give him? Two future twos, based on the, you know, the draft calculation numbers, right? What every draft pick represents in regard to value, probably yeah, two twos.
If you're the Patriots, is that the best you can get? I feel like, you know, we see Minnesota loading up. Like, they have two first-round picks this year. Like, I don't know. Where the Giants, to me, like, what are they going to use their first-round pick next year? Like, that would probably, in my opinion, be what's needed to entice, you know, someone like the Patriots. If they're even willing, we don't know. The Patriots could have their number one guy sitting there with the third pick. Who knows? So it makes it difficult for me to see that at this point. And I get the whole concept. I don't know. I don't know what the Giants, like, where's this package coming from for a team that has so many holes at this point. They don't have an overload of pick. That's, to me, part of the problem here and part of the equation.
Again, Jordan Renan joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Talk about Singletary. Again, you know, as we know, the Giants, they lose Saquon Barkley, which, curious to get your thoughts on that contract, paying him almost over $12 million a year, the Eagles, unbelievable. But now bringing in Singletary, 3 years, 16.5, obviously his relationship with Joe Shane from the Buffalo Bills kind of makes sense. He drafted him. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think what I said, the quote was that I got from someone at the Combine, was that the Giants told them when they met with them that we don't see the value right now in investing $10 million a year in a running back. So what do you get instead? You get a $5 million a year, approximately, it's a little more than that, Devin Singletary, right? And then you supplement him with another veteran, which I believe is coming at some point, a minimum signing guy. Like, you know, I don't know if this is going to be the guy, but, you know, like an Ezekiel Elliott type guy to sort of just complement him. And then maybe even add another one later in the draft, right? I think the Isaiah Pacheco thing is something that teams are looking at and saying, look, if we build the right team, we can get a good running back in the sixth or seventh round to complement and at least be a piece that can contribute. So it appears that that's the way they're going at the running back position. And Saquon Barkley got paid a lot of money. We could say whatever we want about Saquon and the way he handled everything. He said, with his actions, that the Giants, he did not believe, were giving him what he thought his value was, right, on the open market, or what he was worth. It turns out he was right. He was worth more than the Giants were ever offering him, because, look, he got it eventually from the Eagles. That's a lot of money, Anita. That was more than I thought he was going to get. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you. And it certainly created some bad blood, obviously. There's the investigation going on. James Franklin opened his mouth. And clearly, from what I know, the Giants weren't happy with the whole situation, because if you listen around the league, so the negotiating window opened on Monday, there was a belief that that deal was done over the weekend. Like, it was, he was basically going there. The numbers were essentially laid out. And that is something that did not sit well with the Giants. And they're not the ones who ultimately did the tampering allegation or charge. James Franklin kind of took care of that for them.
Yeah, pretty unbelievable. So for folks that are tuning in, what James, he was doing an interview somewhere, right? And
yes, he was doing
on
an interview
podcast
on Tuesday.
He was doing it
Tuesday,
right? And he said on the interview, what were his comments that
he said essentially? So this is on Tuesday. He said he spoke to Saquon over the weekend, and part of the Eagles sales pitch, and specifically said Howie Roseman's sales pitch to Saquon was that, hey, you come back home, kind of. It's, you know, Philadelphia's kind of home for you. Penn State, you know, Philly and Penn State, they share the Eagles and Penn State. They share a lot of the same fan base. It's the perfect spot for you. But the problem is, while the Eagles are allowed to, you know, essentially have communication with Saquon's representatives, they're not allowed, or weren't allowed, to directly have conversations with Saquon Barkley, which is what James Franklin said happened. So, yeah, he kind of put his foot in his mouth and got some people, a lot of eyeballs on the Eagles, at least.
So now the NFL is investigating them, right? And if they are found to have tampered, what, they could lose draft picks, correct?
Yes, that would be the result. It wouldn't be the Giants essentially gaining draft picks, but it could be the Eagles. Think back to the Eagles and the Arizona Cardinals, remember, with Jonathan Gannon and the tampering, like, of when they hired him, the Cardinals, as the head coach, and it happened actually the day of the draft, the morning of the draft, it came out that, you know, they would lose draft picks. The Cardinals lost draft capital.
Last one for you before we let you go. Your thoughts on the offensive line. Obviously, bringing in four new offensive linemen, two potentially will be starters. Your thoughts on how good this offensive line potentially could be this coming season?
It's funny you say that, because I texted someone I know around the league, and when I said, yeah, well, here, let's say this is their offensive line, what do you think? And he's like, that could be an average offensive line. But when you're the Giants and your offensive line is where it's been for so long, you're like, ooh, average. That's good. That would be a good result for them. So I think that's kind of what we're looking at right now. The big question is, does Evan Neal stay at right tackle? Jermaine Illuminor played right tackle last year, played pretty well. I think it's only a matter of time before we're going to see him as the right tackle. That means what happens to Evan Neal? I know it was at least brought up to his people about the possibility of playing left guard, but that was before free agency. John Runyon Jr. has said he preferred left guard. Illuminor has played on the right side. So there's a lot of factors that maybe go into it. But if you could at least have Illuminor on one side at tackle and know that you have at least a competent, decent, maybe above average tackle on the right side, and you have Andrew Thomas on the left side, that's something you can build around.
Jordan, thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. Don't worry about your phone. It happens to all of us.
Appreciate you, Anita. Thanks for being so patient.
You got it. You got it. Enjoy your St. Patrick's Day. Happy Sunday, fun day. Quick break. We come back. We'll switch gears to the Jets. Rich Cimini is going to join us. We'll find out what are the Jets planning to do now that they have solidified a lot of their needs. That will be coming your way next, right here on 98.7 ESPN.